Last Sunday, we introduced an idea from the book of Psalms in which we said that oftentimes the psalmist, David in particular, gives statements of affirmation or the I wills of the book of Psalms. And as we noted last week when he said, I will not be afraid, we looked at the other psalms that have various sentiments to that, that when the Lord is on our side, we have no need to fear. God is with us. God is going to provide. God is going to help. It's interesting that we find other statements like that, one of which appearing here in Psalm 26. And the verse that we have here in Psalm 26, again, like the one we explored last week, actually kind of culminates a number of ideas. If you look down to verse 5, here David writes, I hate the assembly of evildoers, and I will not sit with the wicked. As David realizes his position as a child of God, as a saint of God, he realizes that that is a prevention from being around anything or anybody that is going to promote him to go against the ways of God. So he says, if there is anything that is wicked, if there is anything that's leading me away from God, I'll have no part of that. We know that David at times failed in that statement. That there were times when he did allow himself to be involved with wickedness, just as there have been times in our lives when we have fallen as well. But yet I think every one of us knows, as a saint of God, as a child of God, that we must make that same affirmation, that you and I must make the affirmation, the I will, that wickedness will not be a part of our life. And this evening I want us to talk about that idea. As we think about the idea of wickedness, it perhaps will benefit us if we think about a definition of it first. If we think about what wickedness really involves, I want you to note just a standard definition of the word. Defined, wickedness is bad in character morally by way of thinking, feeling, or action. I think that's an interesting idea. Because so many times we tend to focus on the last word here, the idea of action. The idea that we are okay as long as we don't act on what it is that we're thinking about. But when we look at the definition itself, wickedness composes all of these things. What's going on in our mind, what's going on in our emotion, and what's going on in our actions. And so as David affirms that we are to stay away from that, I think we'll see as we explore several passages tonight that it's got to involve all of these things. We've got to beware of all of these different ideas. But yet, interestingly, as I was looking up some of the various definitions of the word, there was a word that appeared in one of those definitions that I did not expect. And that was the word malignant. What do we think of today when we hear that word malignant? Well, we know. That is a medical term. That's a frightening medical term. That if there is a cancer somewhere within our body and the doctor says that cancer is malignant, we know that it is a danger, it's an aggression. But what's interesting is when you look up the word malignant, that's actually the third definition down. That originally, what this word malignant was known for is to act maliciously. Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? You look at the first part of the word, that prefix mal, meaning bad or acting in a bad way, a malicious way. But note the remainder of that definition. Disposed to cause harm or distress deliberately. Very dangerous or harmful influence. And so I think what the Lord is telling us when He's saying that we are not to sit with the wicked, what He's saying is we are not to allow ourselves to be with those who will have a malignant impact on us, a malicious impact on us. In fact, I think when we put both of these words together, what we are seeing is the idea really that malignancy is a wickedness in motion. It's the idea that we're allowing those wicked thoughts and those wicked feelings to be manifest in some way that's going to deliberately cause harm to another. Let's look at a couple of places where I think the Lord makes that point with these ideas of the malignancy of wickedness. If you look with me over to the book of Mark, chapter 7. Mark, chapter 7. Here is one of those places where the Lord Himself is warning us about this. If you look down to verse 20, a discussion has just been brought up about what actually defiles a person. And so the Lord is using this opportunity to make a point here. And we're going to pick up in verse 20, where the Lord is speaking and He said, "What comes out of a person is what defiles him. For within, from within, out of the heart of man come evil thoughts." Now let's stop right there. The Lord says the malignancy is going to first be introduced by what's going on in the inside, by what's going on within our heart. And now notice our definitions of wickedness and malignancy, and look at what the Lord says very first thing. Notice it again. "For from within, out of the heart of man, come wicked thoughts." Now, what happens when we allow that malignancy of wickedness to have its influence? What happens when we act on wickedness? Well, look at what the Lord says. He goes on to explain it. "Out of the heart of man come evil thoughts." What then? "Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness." All of these evil things come from within, and they defile a person. Now we look at that, and obviously several of these are very outward acts. We think about theft, it's taking from somebody else. We think about sexual immorality, it's having a wrong relationship with someone else. But what the Lord is telling us is, all of this begins when we allow our thoughts to be corrupted by wickedness. When we allow our thoughts to be corrupt, then the malignancy sets in. Then the evil intent sets in, and it's carried out in all of these different ways. I think Paul added to this when he wrote to the Colossians in chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. And he said, "Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry." Now you look at that list, and Paul has intermingled the ideas of from without and within. But note the things that he says, just like the Lord, of what begins in the heart. The idea of evil desire. The idea of covetousness. Notice how he ties in the feeling, the emotion, where he says it's passion that causes this to happen. And then the actions that are committed, what we find there are the evil desires, the immorality, and the impurity. What he's telling us is that the person who is devoted to wickedness stands in opposition to Jesus Christ. When we allow any of these things, whether we're acting on them or not, if we allow these things in our heart, what we are doing is standing in direct opposition to Christ and never fulfilling the idea of being like Him. In fact, notice what Paul says in verse 6. When he says, "On account of these, the wrath of God is coming." Punishment's coming. We violated the covenant. We have not stood with Christ. And therefore this wickedness is causing us to be lost. And it's because of that that David said, "I will not sit with the wicked. I will not have anything to do with those who would lead me to that path not to be like the Lord." With these ideas in mind, I want us to make our lesson, though, a little more specific this evening. And I want us to realize that while wickedness is malignant, we must also understand that wickedness is contagious. I think the Lord teaches that. That if we allow ourselves to be around those who act wickedly, we ourselves are very likely to become like those people. The Lord makes the point very clearly that exposure to wickedness is a danger to us. In fact, let's go to the book of Psalms, to Psalm 1. Very familiar passage. But yet this psalmist is making a very similar point to what we find being made by David. In fact, the psalmist here, as what I think is the case, a psalm that's written as an introduction to the book of Psalms, is giving us in very clear detail what happens when we're wicked. Notice what he says he will not do. He says, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night." I want you to notice that first verse. There's a progression there. I think what the psalmist is showing us is, when you give yourself over to wickedness, it's not going to take long before you're sitting with the wicked. So what does he say? He says, the man who is righteous will not walk in the counsel of the wicked, will not stand in the way of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. Notice the progression once again. When we walk, we can pass by it. In other words, we're saying, I see that there is wickedness here, but I'll have nothing to do with it. But yet when we stand, we start absorbing it. We may be standing at a distance. We may be allowing ourselves not to actually be in the company of, but we're listening. We're paying attention to that wickedness. We're seeing what it has to offer. And then the psalmist says the next in that progression is sitting in the seat of scoffers. When you sit down, you're there to stay. When you sit down, you're ready to be a part of the crowd. And so the psalmist says, if you want to be righteous, have nothing to do with any of this. Don't consider any part of wickedness, whether it be passing or staying, but rather let yourself meditate on the law of God. Go ahead on down to verses 5 and 6 and note the point that he makes. What does he know about the wicked? He says, therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Now that last verse is the covenant of God in a nutshell. Those who are with God are going to be rewarded. Those who are against God are going to be punished. And the psalmist says, make no mistake about it, that if you are in the company of the wicked, you will bear the wrath of God. So don't be. Stay away from them. Don't walk with them. Don't stand with them. Don't sit with them. And in that way, you will not find yourself falling to these things that are causing them to fall. As we consider that idea, I think it very important when, as we are making some rather pointed, specific lessons on these verses, that we understand the necessity of caution with those with whom we're going to develop friendships. When we think about the kind of people with whom we are going to associate on a regular basis, we should exercise a very vast amount of caution. To illustrate this point, I want us to go to a rather unlikely place. We're going to return back to the Old Testament, back to the days of the divided kingdom, when we find two very different men. Two men who are in many ways as opposite as they can be. One who is king in Israel, one who is king in Judah. Let's talk first about King Ahab. And I want you just to remember one verse that we read about him that the Lord records as kind of a resume of this king. It says, and Ahab made an Asherah, false god. Ahab did more to provoke the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger than all of the kings of Israel who were before him. Jeroboam and Nadab and Baasha and Elah and Zimri and Omri. They weren't exactly the head of the class at church on Sunday. These were unrighteous, ungodly men. You had Jeroboam building the golden calf. You had these other kings following in that same path. But as the Lord describes for us King Ahab, he says he was the worst of the worst. You would think about a man who is despicable in the eyes of the Lord, and you'll have a good picture of who Ahab was. But now let's consider the description of King Jehoshaphat in Judah. As we read about him over in 2 Chronicles chapter 17, we read the Lord was with Jehoshaphat because he walked in the earlier ways of his father David. He did not seek the Baals, but sought the God of his father and walked in his commandments and not according to the practices of Israel. This passage says he was the opposite. While Ahab allowed his wicked wife Jezebel to bring in all of the Baals, Jehoshaphat said, "We'll have nothing to do with those here." While Ahab was allowing all of this wickedness to come into the land of Israel, Jehoshaphat was saying, "We will not be involved in the practices of Israel." Night and day. So you would think with such a contrast, surely no friendship would develop. Surely Jehoshaphat is a wise enough man to realize that if you sit with the wicked, you become like the wicked. But yet what do we find when we continue looking at the Scripture? What do we find as a relationship between these two men? Well, first of all, we find out that to seal a covenant, they allowed their children to be wedded as a seal of this alliance. Now, can you imagine a man who's walking in the ways of God, a man who is righteous, a man who is good, a man who's not letting the Baals come into the land? He actually not only approves, but arranges for his son to marry the daughter of these wicked monarchs in Israel. Jezebel, who has brought in all of this corruption. Ahab, who is too weak to stand up to his ungodly wife and allows all of this to come in. We're seeing here a very great lack of judgment. But what else? We find not only that, we find that Jehoshaphat is actually going to listen to the request of this king who in no way stood with the Lord. Note with me over in 1 Kings chapter 22. 1 Kings chapter 22. If this were not such a serious chapter, it would be almost comical. Because what we find is a man who is exercising no restraint in godliness. He's not thinking about those ideas of not sitting with the wicked. Let's note here beginning in verse 1. For 3 years, Syria and Israel continued without war. But in the 3rd year, Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, came down to the king of Israel. And the king of Israel said to his servants, "Do you know that Ramoth-Gilead belongs to us, and we keep quiet and do not take it out of the hand of the king of Syria?" And he said to Jehoshaphat, "Will you go with me to battle at Ramoth-Gilead?" Now, what should Jehoshaphat have said? Well, he should have said nothing because he shouldn't have been there in the first place. But nonetheless, he should have turned and left at that point saying, "I'll have no alliance with a man who is wicked. I will not sit with the wicked." But notice what he does say. Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, "I am as you are, my people as your people, my horses as your horses." Now he does make a very good statement following this. He says, "First, let's inquire of the Lord." And so, make a long story short, they inquire of the Lord, and Jehoshaphat hears in no uncertain terms, the Lord is not with this battle. Don't go. God is not with Ahab. But the sad thing is, immediately after we hear those prophetic words of Micaiah, that horrible things are going to happen, that Ahab will lose his life, that defeat will come, we go down to verse 29 in the chapter, and it says, "So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead." Because Jehoshaphat was sitting with the wicked, he was not standing with the Lord. And because of that, Jehoshaphat very nearly loses his life. In fact, he runs yelling away because the enemy is chasing. And when he gets back home, the Lord admonishes him and tells him, "You should have had nothing to do with that. And the only reason you're alive now is because of the good that you have done in the past." Jehoshaphat made a very serious mistake, but Jehoshaphat did not learn his lesson. We find that even after the death of Ahab, that Jehoshaphat continues his dealings with Ahab's wicked children. You look on over in chapter 22 down to verse 48, And it says, Jehoshaphat made ships of Tarshish to go to Ophir for gold, but they did not go, for the ships were wrecked at Ezion-Geber. Then Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, said to Jehoshaphat, let my servants go with your servants in the ships. But Jehoshaphat was not willing. He finally learned his lesson. But it took wrecking all of the ships with which he had built an alliance with the wicked son of Ahab, Ahaziah, to make that point to him. Does that illustrate to us what can happen when you sit with the wicked? Does that illustrate to us that a godly man can succumb to wickedness when he allows himself to be in the company of those kind of people? The Lord said through Solomon in Proverbs 1 and verse 10, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Those are the words that Jehoshaphat should have listened to, but he ignored them. And so I encourage all of us, no matter what our age is, to be very careful when it comes to the alliances and the associations that we make. And I want to speak a special word to our young people in this regard. While it is a problem at every age, it is a particular problem at a younger age. And I want you to understand that if you associate with people who have no respect for God, or if you associate with people who have no respect for the way that God has told us to worship, to behave, whatever the case, you most likely are going to be contaminated with wickedness. More likely as not, you will find a person going to sit with the wicked rather than bringing the wicked to stand with the Lord. We must be careful, and we must not kid ourselves into thinking that we are stronger than we really are. I know what they're doing is wrong, but it won't affect me. Yes, it will. Yes, it will. Wickedness is contagious. That wickedness is contagious as well as we meet the very best friend that we might have in life. When we think about the person who we're going to marry, if we pick the wrong person, wickedness can be malignant. If we pick a person who has no respect for God, we're putting ourselves in danger. Could we talk to Ahab and Jezebel about that? Here was Jezebel, a woman who was the daughter of a king, but a very rotten, wicked king. And she brings that rottenness to Israel and even outlaws the worship of Jehovah. And her weak husband would not stand up against her. Do you think we could ask that of Jehoram and Athaliah, the son of Jehoshaphat and the daughter of Ahab, who are married? In fact, when Jehoram dies, it says, to no one's sorrow he departed. Here was the man who had a very good father who made a very bad decision to put him in association with this wicked woman. And a couple I'd like for us to read a little bit about, though we know their story quite well. Let's look over to Acts chapter 5. Acts chapter 5. We move now into the era of Christianity, and we find here two Christians who are wanting it to appear that they are doing very good things. But I want to hone in on a couple of lines that maybe we don't focus on quite as much as others. If you look in verse 1, it says, but a man named Ananias, with his wife Sapphira, sold a piece of property. Now I want you to note verse 2, the first line of it. And with his wife's knowledge, he kept back for himself some of the proceeds and brought only a part of it and laid it at the apostles' feet. You ever wondered what kind of woman Sapphira was? We hear that name and immediately it's associated with bad, as it should be, because there's a malignancy here. But I wonder if perhaps Sapphira was a woman who found herself sitting with the wicked. A woman who, with her silent, perhaps, consent, gave sway to this wickedness where they're going to bring this money and they're going to lie. And they're going to say, we're giving it all so that they could have good reputation. But nonetheless, their lie becomes known. And as Ananias comes in and he tells this, Peter rebukes him. And we find in verse 5 that Ananias fell down dead. But now I want you to note down in verse 7, after an interval of about 3 hours, his wife came in, not knowing what had happened. And Peter said to her, "Tell me whether you sold the land for so much." And she said, "Yes, for so much." She had sat with the wicked. She had cast in her lot with the wicked. And she finds herself suffering the same fate. Here was a couple whose lives could have been very different, who were making a statement that the Lord really did not require them to do, of selling everything. The Lord had not told them to do that. But yet they desired that reputation. And because of that, both of them are destroyed. There's a lesson for us in that. The person who we marry is going to have a tremendous impact on our spirituality. And in our culture, where we choose who we're going to marry by dating, let me just remind you, if a person encourages you to wickedness, you will most likely become contaminated. Whether that be sexual sin, whether that be going against the ways of the Lord, whether that be trading your values as a Christian, whatever the case. While there are some who rise to stand with the Lord, my experience is in these cases, most of the time, those who are not selective, spiritually selective about who they date, find themselves marrying someone who will lead them astray. We must be very careful. Whether moral, religious, or anything else, like David, we must make the commitment to stand with the wicked. Well, one more point in this regard I want to make. Not only is wickedness contagious as we talk about our friendships, as we talk about who we marry, wickedness is also contagious when we talk about our spiritual associations. Let me remind you of a verse that probably you know quite well. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, bad company corrupts good morals. Evil company corrupts good habits. Whatever translation you learned it from. You've probably known that for quite a while. You can probably remember your mother telling you that if you had a mother who was a Christian. And as she looked at your friends, perhaps she said, "You need to remember." Well, that's good. That's a good statement to make. And I don't want to take anything away from it. But I'd like to slip this verse back into its context. 1 Corinthians 15, the apostle here is not talking about the people who are tempting you to drink, not tempting you about doing drugs, tempting you to immorality. What the apostle is talking about here is other Christians. Notice, if you will, over in 1 Corinthians 15. And as we back up just a bit to verses 12 and 13, Paul introduces an idea that he's going to focus on for the next several verses. He says, "Now if Christ is proclaimed as raised from the dead, how can some of you say there is no resurrection of the dead? But if there is no resurrection of the dead, then not even Christ has been raised." Okay, and it's just like Paul is lining up the dominoes and he's pushing one of them over. And he says, okay, if there's no resurrection and Christ is not raised, then your Christianity is not sound. You're not doing anything that's going to help you. This is all a sham. And he continues with that idea. And we come down to verse 32 where he says, "And what do I gain if, humanly speaking, I fought with beasts in Ephesus? If the dead are not raised, let us eat, drink, and drink, for tomorrow we die." Verse 33, "Do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals." He was talking about Christians. He was talking about their associates. He was talking about people who had given their lives to Christ, but very mistakenly said, "There is no resurrection." Paul said, "Beware of that, because if you throw out the truth on the resurrection, you throw out Christianity. Be careful of bad company." We understand that our Christian association is one of the absolute best relationships we can experience. Unless a Christian becomes wicked. Unless a Christian says, "I no longer need to believe in the ways of God." And so if a fellow Christian is encouraging me to do wrong, I do not sit with the wicked. I teach, I admonish, I encourage, I help, but I do not sit with them. I do not allow that contagious wickedness to affect me, just as Paul warned the Corinthians. And I think in many ways, this is one of the hardest types of wickedness to avoid. Yet we must be vigilant. And for all three of these, I would just simply remind us that doing what's right is not always the easiest thing to do. In fact, it rarely is. But we do what's right, not what's easy. So then how do we prevent wickedness? We've talked about its malignancy. We've talked about its contagion. How do we prevent it? Let me just sum it up in the words of the Psalms, with a few more affirmations, with a few more I wills. We think about Psalm 26:11. But as for me, I shall walk in my integrity. Redeem me and be gracious to me. And in Psalm 39, verse 1, I said, I will guard my ways, that I may not sin with my tongue. I will guard my mouth with a muzzle, so long as the wicked are in my presence. And we think about Psalm 101:3, I will not set before my eyes anything that is worthless. I hate the work of those who fall away. It shall not cling to me. And finally, we read in Psalm 101 and verse 4, a perverse heart shall be far from me. I will know nothing of evil. I want you to imagine the difference in our lives if every one of those affirmations were our affirmations. If every one of those I wills was my will. Do you think we would have much problem overcoming wickedness? You think we would have much problem overcoming those who are encouraging us to sit in fellowship with them in this wickedness? No. And that's what the psalmist is saying. What we understand is that in guarding against this danger, I first build my own integrity before the Lord. And second, I allow no one to tempt me to destroy that integrity. So I ask each of us this evening, how interested are we in maintaining godliness? How serious are we in avoiding the ways of wickedness? It depends on the real sense of danger we see in wickedness. If wickedness is just a joke to us, if wickedness is no big deal, if wickedness is just a way of life, I'll find myself falling very quickly. And I'll find myself sitting right in the middle of the wicked. But if I make the commitment and understand the danger that David and these other psalmists saw, I'll find myself avoiding wickedness with every fiber of my being. Where do each of us stand? That's the question David asked of himself and very emphatically said, I will not sit with the wicked. And I hope for each of us that our statement is the same and just as emphatic.